Good morning, everybody. Today is Monday, March 27th, 2017. And this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy Monday, everyone. It is 52 degrees and sort of rainy, sort of sunny, sort of warm here in upstate New York. They actually said it's supposed to go to 60 today. So, hey, spring has sprung. So, where do we leave off on Friday? Oh, guys, we went down a deep, dark rabbit hole. We titled the show DARPA, Dopamine, Sonic Projectors, Brain Invaders, and Frequencies. And we had spent the entire week last week looking at some of this military technology, like we always do, but in relation to the mind, how they have been working on sucking thoughts, sucking memories, implanting memories, reading dreams, and all kinds of crazy stuff that you wouldn't even believe if there wasn't a Science Journal article on it. But I had run across Jesse Ventura's, I don't remember, a conspiracy theory episode that was about targeted individuals. And some of this voice of God weaponry, he had discussed these Gwen towers that were microwave towers that the federal government had utilized during wartime. This is how they explained it, of course, to communicate in the event of a nuclear war when everything else was down. Now, that led me to pulling a couple little threads, and you know what happens when you pull a little thread. It turns into a complete unraveling of the story. And this whole weekend, I traveled down the rabbit hole until late last night when I finally came upon, oh, one of the grand cherries on top. And I'd kind of known this, but I saw a list of discoveries in the years that they were made. And it has convinced me that we probably don't know nothing yet. It's pretty insane. So I'm gonna see, I don't know, maybe I'll see if my friend, who probably knows the entire history because he lived it, of this, maybe he'll want to come on one of these days. I don't know. People are shy about coming on the radio. And not because they're scared, but you know, especially if you were in the industry, though he's retired now, so maybe he won't care. But especially if you're in the industry, you gotta be careful because people don't like you opening your mouth. And there are contracts. I mean, we were a reseller all those years, and so you would do state and federal and education and healthcare and, you know, all the verticals, banking. But anybody who wants to be in an industry like that, where you're developing communication solutions for the masses, needs to be on the QT, so to speak, because the network is where all of your data resides, and I don't think they'd take too kindly. So anyway, like I said, people, professionals in my industry tend to shy away from opening their mouths. I know people all started looking me sideways when I first started questioning the machine. People would distance themselves, like, okay, Jill, go sit and talk crazy in the corner. Because I was anti, you know, I really started questioning what they were doing with some of this technology. But anyway, so I do have somebody who I might be able to ask, but let's take a look now. So those Gwen Towers, this is what started me. Now, I had never really heard of these before. I knew that we had a whole big mesh network that was out there that we had been using for years, and I knew it went back to at least the Cold War. Well, guys, it goes way even further than that. I mean, it's horrifying how much of this stuff has been going on, and we have not been aware of any of it. So at the end of the show, we looked at the radio spectrum. DARPA had put out, I guess it was a story about this new Cyber Grand Challenge thing that they have going on, where they are going to look for someone who can multiplex, and we're talking like giga multiplex. I don't even know if that's a term, but If you look at the frequency spectrum for just radio waves, it's incredibly massive. And they think it's inefficient. They think that the way we've been doing it for years is being wasteful because we license a piece of bandwidth and your name was on it for however long you were licensing it for, and you could use it for anything. For any of your stuff, you had to conform, of course, to FCC rules if you're doing broadcast radio. No swearing. But it was your spectrum that you could tinker with. And as long as it was licensed and you were approved from the big boys, it was all yours to play with. Well, DARPA is now looking to be able to make that more efficient. This is kind of how we got started in all the stuff last week. And what they're talking about doing is launching AI to be the multiplexer. So in the past, they've typically used some sort of switching, and we're going to get back here because here's what I don't think any of us realize. The industry that I came from, which was the telephony and networking industry, communications industry, I came in right as telephone was starting to merge with data. But we had all these old telephone networks, ISDNs. I don't even remember some of the other ones, weird dial-up things and all these weird-ass modems and things that were real slow, but at the time they were real fast, and they allowed them to connect offices together and communicate. But then we upgraded everybody to Ethernet, and we upgraded them to T1s, and that's where I came from. That's probably the last 15, 20 years of my life was doing that stuff, and I worked with lots of old-timer telephone people, and not like telephone technicians, though we did have those with the little butt thing that would go try and fix your phone, but no, I worked with the engineers that worked on the high-end back-end systems that then interfaced with the large telecom backbone providers. And I think last week we talked a little bit about AT&T. I had mentioned AT&T had been through many sales and acquisitions over the years, divestings. Is that a word? Divestations? Is that a word? Where they broke them up and threatened because they were a monopoly. Then the Fed said, you know, if you help us out here, maybe we won't break you up. Which, when I was reading that the other day about AT&T and their history, and the Feds threatening them with breaking them up because they were a monopoly, and then the war happened. And then they were like, well, maybe we don't have to. It reminded me of Bill Gates and that antitrust lawsuit, if you remember, threatening to break them up. And then just one day they're like, you don't have to. I think they all gave them the keys. So in AT&T's case, it actually got handed off to the United States Postal Service. It was way back, and I don't know. We'll have to see. It's in one of these stories. Guys, you don't even know. Like, my brain is just – I woke up this morning, and I couldn't even – last night when I went to bed, I couldn't put a cork on it in my head. And so I think it was just spewing out all over my pillow all night. Because when I woke up this morning, I was still thinking about all this stuff, and my brain was still trying to churn through all the information that I read this weekend. And I almost – skip the show today because I don't know. I don't like doing shows when my brain hasn't fully digested everything I've been trying to comprehend. But all you people in there in chat, I know it kind of makes for a crappy Monday morning if the show you're looking forward to is a rebroad. So I'm here. Yay. Anyway, so there's very, very, very long, sordid history I've discovered between the origins of the phone network backbone, i.e. AT&T, i.e. back to Alexander Graham Bell. Ding. We talked about that on Friday. and the federal government. Who would have thunk it? Who would have thunk it? But what got me here were these Gwen's Towers that Jesse Ventura had been talking about, this microwave network that was to send data, send communication messages in the event of a nuclear war. So now, like I said, we've looked at the frequency spectrum. There's a massive radio frequency spectrum that includes satellite, radio astronomy, all creations, by the way, of Bell Labs. We're going to talk about them because I think, you know, we spent a lot of time talking about DARPA. I really think that Bell Labs might be the precursor to DARPA. And I saw at one point ARPA and Bell Labs actually coexisted, but they don't seem, I was pretty certain it had to be some of the same people, but they don't seem like they were chummy pals. Like maybe they worked on some real high-tech stuff during the time, but it didn't look like they were the same, under the same umbrella, for nationalism's sake, and maybe for the war effort, because that's what I've discovered, a lot of this high-tech stuff. You know, when we go to war with things, we need to surveil things. We need intelligence. We need killer weapons. Well, this was a killer weapon in a way. Communications technology, and knowing how to use it for surveillance is a weapon. And to be able to surveil everything is a weapon. And to be able to manipulate and control via some airwave technology is a weapon. I found this very hard to believe, so I kept digging and digging and digging. Guys, you're not going to believe some of the stuff that I found. Like last night, I had to finally go to bed. I had to force myself to go to bed because I was just so deep engrossed. All right, so where do we even start? Because now I've made all kinds of promises. I want to make sure I get there. So we looked at this radio frequency spectrum. This is out of actually Wikipedia, but DARPA posted it as part of their story that's talking about this new DARPA Cyber Grand Challenge. Is what they're calling it? No. New DARPA Grand Challenge to focus on spectrum collaboration. DARPA today, and this was March 23rd, 2016, so exactly a year ago and 4 days. The newest of its grand challenges, one designed to ensure that the exponentially growing number of military and civilian wireless devices will have full access to the increasingly crowded electromagnetic spectrum. Right? It's all about you and your cell phone that is sucking you and your children into the machine. And we're going to turn on Africa, people. So you better make sure we have enough spectrum. So, okay, problem, reaction, solution. The agency's Spectrum Collaboration Challenge, known as SC2 for short, will reward teams for developing smart systems that collaboratively, rather than competitively, adapt in real time, ding ding, shape shifting, to today's fast changing, congested spectrum environment, redefining the conventional spectrum management roles of humans and machines, ding ding, in order to maximize the flow of radio frequency signals. DARPA officials, and by the way, radio frequency, when they say that, they're talking about the entire spectrum. So we're talking about VLF, AM, FM, microwave, millimeter wave. And you know, they're doing all kinds of crazy stuff with millimeter wave and 5G. Don't let them fool you that it's just about your cell phone. You know, that's the way they're going to sell it to the American public. But be aware that Trojan horse, we talked about Trojan horses in our lives. They've been sending in those slimy tentacles for quite a while now. And the cell phone is a Trojan horse. Go back a couple days ago, look at the notes. I have a load of stories. I think there's five of them about some real research now as to what they're discovering that pushing that dopamine button, being on that device for your child, what that is doing to their head. Be aware of that. You know, I was pretty surprised because usually tend to keep a low profile with my friends on Facebook. I don't try and stuff any of this stuff down their throats. If they want to listen, they can. Most of them don't. I'd say probably the large majority of them are, if all of them don't. I don't think there's. Maybe one person in real life that maybe has listened a couple times. But he's usually too busy to be able to. So I try to keep a low profile with my real friends so I don't frighten them because I've given up a long time ago. But I did post a few of those stories about the kids, the Generation Z online. And that was the little girl who's ended up in a mental institution a few times now because of what the devices did to her brain. And there was another one with a psychologist with two children who has been doing some research into this, and she really discovered, I talked about that on Friday, about the pruning and some of the issues with children getting their hands on devices too early before their brains are ready for it. And I actually had one of my old coworkers, I know she's a grandma now, had one of my old coworkers share it on Facebook, and another one of my old friends of like 30 plus years make a comment on it like they thought it was really scary. So I was surprised. I was surprised because there was a topic that two people who normally would not listen ever because, you know, they love me. We love you, Jewel. But you're sometimes really out there who actually stopped for a minute and said, oh, because they both have grandchildren. See, same thing that happened to me when I had a kid. I didn't. All this stuff was just so totally different in my perspective before I had a child. But once I had a child, my whole core kind of shifted to see things differently. And it's frightening. It's frightening. So, kind of a little foray there. But if you haven't read those stories about the effects of devices on the human brain, and especially what it's doing to this next generation, is turning them into a world of addicted psychopath junkies. And literally, the brain scans and the whole biology of what happens in the brain with that dopamine button is exactly what they're seeing in psychopaths. We are creating psychopathic children who will, in the future, run this world, who will be ready to open their arms and invite in the machine. The machine that we've found, and I'm going to dig even deeper here, the machine that we've discovered is being developed by institutions such as DARPA, the War Machine, and Bell Labs. At least that was the precursor to all of this. Blame it on Bell Labs. I used to blame it on DARPA and Kurzweil. Bell Labs goes so far back, and they were so tied in with the military industrial complex. And hey, you know, it was all about being able to call granny without having to send a Morse code. It's just crazy. Okay, so wait, let's get back to this DARPA grand collaboration spectrum challenge. The primary goal is to imbue radios. You always gotta love when they want to imbue something. So what are we gonna imbue radios with today? Well, we are going to imbue radios with advanced machine learning capabilities so that they can collectively develop strategies to optimize use of the wireless spectrum. And I think they mean wireless as in not just 802.11 wireless. They're talking wireless as in the entire electromagnetic spectrum in ways not possible with today's intrinsically inefficient approach of pre-allocating exclusive access to designated frequencies. Now, what concerned me, like when I first read this story last week or so, I was thinking about it, I was like, oh, this is crazy. We're going to have computers that are going to take control of the entire radio spectrum. And they'll be able to censor you. But see, I started thinking way deeper than on this. My brain needs to percolate. That's what happens. And as I started to connect more dots together and I started thinking about this, we started discovering that there are some strange things going on. We read about that voice of God weapon that the military had been using with microwave technologies. We talked a little bit about targeted individuals. If anyone heard Tim Kelly's show this weekend, Our Interesting Times on UCBI Saturday nights at 7. Tim Kelly had a doctor, not a medical doctor. I think she was a physicist and a psychiatrist or something. She had actually even worked at CERN, if you can believe it. She's from Oxford. And she had, I don't remember what the whole story was, she had spoken up or raised some concerns. And she's pretty certain that MI6 is targeting her. And it's been for probably 10 years. I listened to part one of the interview. It is almost a 3-hour long interview. So I cut it into three pieces. So part one was aired Saturday night. That should be on the UCY YouTube channel. YouTube.com/UCYTV. No doubt. It's Our Interesting Times with Tim Kelly. And I have so many tabs open. I don't think I could find a tab that's got YouTube open on it. But you'll find it. Tim Kelly Show from this week is part one. Part two and part three will be aired over the next few weeks. But guys, this woman is no lunatic, okay? That's all I'm going to tell you. Like, maybe you can read through some of these stories and watch Jesse Ventura and even say, Jesse, Mr. Conspiracy Theory, what is he talking about with targeting people? But Wired Magazine had talked about their sonic projector utilizing microwaves to beam voices into people's heads. And they talked about it being used during the Iraq War with the Iraqis to get them to put down their guns and make all of the Iraqis think that it was Allah talking to them through their head using the same microwave technology. Now, guys, these towers, and I know I'm kind of bouncing all over, but it's a lot to get our heads around. These Gwen towers that Jesse Ventura had spoken about in the episode that he focused on these technologies was the military version. And when I was digging, I discovered that from that same time period, there was a much bigger microwave network than just the Gwen's towers in the United States. And those were owned by AT&T. Well, like I said, my history working in the communications industry, I already knew about the history kind of AT&T, at least in regards to commercial sales and acquisitions. I mean, we all remember when Lucent spun off and then Alcatel, and that's where some of the Baby Bells came from, Southern Bell and all that. they are Southwestern Bell. Maybe they were called the Southern Bell. Though maybe there was one. AT&T has been a staple for as long as I remember. And it gets even scarier because they go way before that. They go way before being commercial, way before being the logo, way before being the commercial phone company. They were the phone company. It goes back, and I mentioned this on Friday, to Alexander Graham Bell. 1888 or something. We'll find it. And then 1925 is when they first created Bell Labs and started pumping out innovation. Anyway, so the old way of doing things, though, so what's old is new again, has kind of become outmoded to the point of allocating bandwidth spectrum like we have for the last 100 years or so, we now apparently need an AI to take control and to multiplex it in new incredible ways. So they just, I mean, multiplexing is incredible to begin with. We used to do optical multiplexing probably 15 years ago already with core, big core routers with big fiber connections. Typically, you would do that if you were designing like a metropolitan area network or some sort of large corporate network, because they were massive chunks of change. I mean, we're talking big, big bucks for these things. But it was really great because what it did was it allowed them to interleave just by timing lots of different streams over the same pipe. What I discovered, do you know where they created multiplexing? And I guess I probably knew this but didn't. Never put two and two together. Was in the telephone world, in the telephone switching world. To be able to send voice over the lines and lots of voices, long distance, data communications eventually. But in the very beginning, it was television. Yes, 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 Bell Labs. Bell Labs was also instrumental in television and the tube and satellite communications for television signals and multiplexing of television signals. Look, when I started digging into this last night, my brain was going so insane because this one company is responsible for all of these tools, all of these technologies that are now enslaving our brains. The same company. It's beyond crazy. Now, I found a list of every invention the Bell Labs was tasked with, and you would fall over. We're going to look at some of them before the end of the show. Now, this might be a 2 or 3 day event here talking about this stuff, because my brain needs to percolate a little bit more to get fully cohesive as to what this means. But I can tell you this, it's not good. It's like so far old, back to the days of Alexander Graham Bell. Think about that. Pre-television. Think about that. Pre-talkies in the movie. And guess who came up with the talkies? Oh, yes, Bell Labs. Bell Labs. That's just insane. All right, so anyway. But the future is for DARPA to now give artificial intelligence the keys to being able to rule this entire electromagnetic spectrum. Now, if I didn't know any better, I know we've been warning a long time about Skynet, and I should be wearing my Skynet t-shirt today, but this is probably the closest thing that I've seen to an actual Skynet, because if we're talking about the frequencies that tie into all of the networks, including satellite and radio astronomy, microwaves, FM, AM, millimeter wave, radar, UHF, VHF, SLF, whatever the other one was. Guys, this is giving the keys to an artificial intelligence that would be running all of our networks that were tied to weapon systems and all of our networks that are tied to all of our communications. Very, very frightening. They would be able to tap in, manipulate, control every single slice of the spectrum. And I can guarantee you they're probably going to look at doing this with some sort of autonomy. There's going to be someone sitting there managing the whole thing. Of course it's going to be autonomous. How would it be able to switch that fast? Multiplex. All right. So let's read a little bit more about this grand challenge of creating Skynet. DARPA challenges have traditionally rewarded teams that dominate their competitors. So remember, they just did the shape-shifting immune system for the internet with the Cyber Grand Challenge last summer. Carnegie Mellon won it. That's the mayhem that they have set loose. But when it comes to making the most of the electromagnetic spectrum, the team that shares most intelligently is going to win. We want to radically accelerate the development of machine learning technologies, ding, that will allow on-the-fly sharing of spectrum at machine-level timescales. We need radio frequencies to be fast enough for our supercomputers with AI brains. I mean, this is beyond horrifying. I cannot, honestly, last night, I really was sitting here for a few minutes doing the pinch test. I'm like, are we really at this point in time where they are about ready to hand the very last of the very little things that we have left that are still human run, that are still not polluted, to the machine? And oh, yes, we are. Let me just tell you again, mentioning back to the machine, I did also do the homework that I assigned everyone this past weekend, which was to watch Kurzweil's, which one was it? It wasn't The Singularity Is Near. Hold on. I don't know, my poor head. Transcendent Man, that's what it was, by Ray. And we watched it with my family. I thought it would be good. My family who points and laughs at me. I thought it would be good to make them watch it with me. Since I really, I don't know, I get all goosebumpy when I get that near to Ray. But I really felt that it was important that I listen to what he had to say, so I could pick it apart and come to some new conclusions. And I have to say that my family stayed pretty quiet. And I sat there with my mouth open for the whole thing. And yeah, you know what? These lunatics running the asylum. And Ray, yeah, director at Google, rotten cherry on top, making all this AI stuff happen, deep brain, rolling all out. This is all for real. And what was even more disturbing was that the beginning of that little documentary sales slick piece for transhumanism called Transcendent Man had Ray start out on one of the old 50s. I think it was like What's My Line, maybe, or Who's That Something. And it was one of the 50s game shows. And Ray was a 17-year-old guest that they hit him in front of a piano, or yeah, I think it was a piano. It wasn't an organ at that time. And he played a song, and then they had to guess what his line was. And it ended up that he was a kid who created a computer back, and maybe it was even before the 50s. That was maybe even like the 40s or something. I think it was Paul Allen show, it looked like. He created a computer that created music. Now, dot, dot, dotted line to Bell Labs, because Bell Labs, not only did they work on voice, but they worked on audio, they worked on speech synthesis, they worked on anything electronic that could send sounds and tones and voices over the wire and then over the air. With as much autonomy as possible, they were computerizing things, right? Remember the old days on the phone network? You had a woman sitting in a room, bink, 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 with cables, bink, bink, connecting two points, bink, bink. That was the beginning of the network. And when telephone switching came into play, I don't know in the very beginning if they used tones, but that SS7 network, that was kind of like the back-end management to the phone switches, used tones. And that's how it did the switching in the core of the routing instead of the operator. The operators became obsolete. But it's interesting that Kurzweil, music, sound, tones, high-end computing, and making humans obsolete seem to be all connected. What's even more interesting is that the human brain works on some of those same frequencies, and tones and notes can push buttons within the human brain. And I really, really believe that some of this brain project and DARPA being really tied in to doing all these brain implants and sucking thoughts in and out of people's heads are all part of the same thing. I actually am certain of it. I don't even think. I'm certain of it. Trying to put this all out on paper is something that someone should help me do. This is mind-boggling. I need to make a diagram and some drawings. Oh, I know. One of the other things, too, we looked at, we started the week off last week, was that Unabomber documentary. And we started getting into how there was mind control and the CIA and the LSD and all these things that were part of experiments, mind control experiments that they were doing on the American public. Now, very last, and then I'm going to get back here again. Very last, something I ran across just before I went to bed, and of course, this was another hour that I stayed up reading about this, was this Rockefeller, what was it called? Commission. I didn't know there was a Rockefeller Commission back during, I think it was Gerald Ford. Where? No, it wasn't during Ford. It was during Nixon? No, it was during Ford. Where they were doing a big investigation into the CIA and all of the experimentation that they had been doing on the American public. And by the way, it was Nelson Rockefeller that was in charge of that commission. And Nelson Rockefeller was the son of John D. Rockefeller, who just died. Nelson Rockefeller was also, I discovered, who knew, the governor of New York for like 13 years, back from the 50s to the 70s. I had no idea. And then he became vice president during the reign of Gerald Ford. I didn't know that either. He had a Rockefeller. He was the son of John D. He died, Nelson Rockefeller, in like the 1979, something like that, of a heart attack. Kind of young. Well, he wasn't that young. Maybe he was 60, something like that. But what was interesting about him dying that way and dying early, and that his father lived like 3 decades beyond him, was that he headed this Rockefeller commission that was created in response to a report out of the New York Times in 1974 that the CIA had conducted illegal domestic activities, including experiments on U.S. citizens during the 1960s. Ding-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling. And that was all the stuff we were looking at watching that Unabomber documentary. This commission, the Rockefeller Commission, issued a single report in 1975 touching upon certain CIA abuses, including mail opening and surveillance of domestic dissident groups. But the report also publicized Project MK Ultra, which was the CIA mind control study. Ding-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling. But wait, there's more. This same commission also studied issues relating to the JFK assassination, specifically the head snap, as seen in the Zapruder film, which was first shown on television in 1975, and the possible presence of E. Howard Hunt and Frank Sturgis in Dallas. Now, I was reading some book that this woman published in the 90s, and this was part of this intelligence. I don't know if they were ex-intelligence operatives or whatever. And we're going to have to save this for tomorrow. But she was saying that Dick Cheney, there was a huge part of this report, this Rockefeller Commission report that came out before they would let it be released. Oh, I don't remember what his job was, but it was pretty high up there in the White House. He was one of those commissions. I don't think he was Secretary of State, but he was one of the main offices within the White House. Good old Dickie Cheney. Dickie Cheney. He was there, and Dickie Cheney, he was actually on this commission too. Dickie Cheney suggested that they remove all the information about the JFK assassination and that out of this report so as not to upset the American public, and it all got destroyed. So take that for what it's worth, but I find it interesting that Rockefeller just dropped dead at a ripe 101 years old. Yet, can be certain that Rockefeller knew all about this whole time period since his son was the governor of New York for 13 years or whatever, and the vice president and head of this commission. I'm sure the father, John D. Rockefeller, knew every yucky detail about the CIA and the deep state. And when we take a look at what's going on right now politically, and I mean, we are talking a complete and utter takeover, and there is a battle going on within our government as to who is going to win this game. Don't call me crazy, because you can see it everywhere. They are punching each other right now. We are in the mud. And there is a. I hear pigs squealing even wee, 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 in the mud because this is a knockdown, drag-out fight that's going on. But the fact that Rockefeller just kind of croaked, and I mean, he was an old coot, but on the other hand, there wasn't a lot of press coverage. I've only seen two stories, and one was New York Times, one was RT. I haven't seen anything on the evening news. Pigmind didn't see anything in the video feed. So why was this not touted as one of our great philanthropists throughout the history of Americana? Because he really was. I mean, he influenced everything. Rockefeller and his foundations and money. He had his sticky fingers in everything. Why would that not make headline news? So it kind of struck me as odd, you know. I had kind of postulated, and then I had a listener email me, "Hi Camille," and we both thought the same thing, that maybe the dude's not really dead, or maybe they froze him even. And I saw there was just a couple new discoveries, but I'm not going to get off topic, with longevity medicine, DNA stuff, and what was the other one? Oh, damn, I don't know. Over the last 2 days, big, big, big stuff. That, you know, never before seen. We just discovered this. Oh, you could live forever, maybe. So I don't know. But look, it just is kind of odd that these are the people in the know. This was like one of the probably the last living people, except for maybe Kissinger, because Kissinger was around in those days. Maybe Dickie Cheney. But Rockefeller was one of the dudes who was definitely in the know about what was going on with the deep state. And some of this battle that is happening right now. And as this starts to play out, as they try to discredit anything that is not the mainstream narrative, is fake news. And you see that happening now even more so. We saw this whole apology by Alex Jones about Pizzagate. And there was a letter, and I don't know, I see people saying all kinds of stuff, but I remember he got a letter from the pizza dude, and I'm sure it was a cease and desist. And if you don't shut your mouth, I'm gonna sue you, and I might sue you anyway for let's see, slander, libelous literature. So slander, and if they wrote a story about it, maybe libel as well. But they talked about it on the radio, so shut up, make an apology, or that's the end of that. But look, they're using this. See, Donald Trump was on the Alex Jones show. Alex Jones does nothing but jockey for Donald Trump. And so if they discredit Alex Jones, well, then they can even better discredit Donald Trump. And anything that Trump says is untrue, of course. Anything that Trump's staff says should be made fun of. And I'm not saying, like, I don't kind of laugh at some of the dumb shit that's said up there, and that I'm not kind of thinking to myself, oh my God, how did these clowns get in here? But remember, problem, reaction, solution. They've already tried to explain to us how this debacle in the White House happened as being, you know, we're just a little too emotional there, Johnny, about making decisions. And that's what makes humans fallible. AI would never make decisions based upon emotions. And I just saw again this weekend, what would a government run by AI look like? I'm telling you, they're setting us up. And just as outgoing Obama is leaving the White House, he gives that speech at Carnegie Mellon University, the place where that cyber grand challenge for DARPA's shape-shifting immune system, the internet they just let go, came from, was Carnegie Mellon University. Obama gave that talk about how artificial intelligence is going to transform the country for the next president. Guys, I know for a fact that what I am seeing happening is all absolutely related. Let's see, most people aren't paying attention. Guys, if I were working 16 hours a day like I did for all those years, I wouldn't know any of this stuff. Thank goodness. I couldn't be a mom and be an engineer at the same time. But what it's enabled me to do is take a look at all this stuff in the back end with a critical eye and look at it from at least some of my experience, the stuff that I've worked on and stuff that I've seen and some of these different verticals that I've been inside. So we've done business with all the different verticals, you know, talking to IT guys and CFOs, doing proposals, going to the manufacturers, getting manufacturer training on all the products. It's just made me look at this very differently than just reading a news story. I gotta tell you, it's not good. Prepare for what they are pulling, and don't be surprised when it happens. But we are being taken over by this group of megalomaniacs, even more so, psychopathic lunatics that I don't even know what they want. Like, what is the end game? The end game is just to completely control everyone? Is that how Risk ends? Stratego? I've never really played that game. I kind of wanted to. I mean, is that how it ends? World domination? Is that what it's all about? Full spectrum dominance. I guess, but then what? Then what? So, all right, I've gotten so far off the path. Let's go back to this DARPA grand challenge focusing on giving the AI the full spectrum of radio frequencies to control autonomously. That would include all of our weapon systems, all of our communication technologies, all of our internet, so that once you've been deemed fake news, they might be able to blink, just pull your plug. Your address does not get spectrum if you're on this node. You know, and knowing some of the stuff that we know with Keith Alexander, in that Wired Magazine article, they interviewed him. We spent 3 days on that story. He had talked about all the cyber patrol silos that he set up because the internet now was the new battlefield and hacking was a declaration of war. Keith Alexander had talked about them being able to even launch attacks electronically and blow up machines. And I was like, does he literally mean like blow up machines? Or does he mean like blow up machines like we would say, oh, my machine blew up, and that meant you got a blue screen? Didn't mean literally that the machine went poof. No good. We used to call it the magic smoke. The magic smoke would come out and your machine blew up. But Keith Alexander, and I remember I read that section a couple different times to understand exactly how he was wording it, but it sounded to me like they had already had some sort of weapon that literally could zap your machine. All right, well, let's look at this. So to host this new challenge, DARPA aims to construct the largest of its kind wireless testbed, which will serve during and after this spectrum collaboration is a national asset for evaluating spectrum sharing strategies, tactics, and algorithms for next generation radio systems. Ding, 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 ding. So this is going to be taking all this stuff that Bell Labs worked on, all this stuff that came from the quote-unquote phone company, which when I was growing up, that phone company was the government. And, you know, we used to be all afraid. My mother would say, oh, if anyone from the phone company knocks on the door, do not let them in the house. Tell them that your mother and father are not home, and they need to come back. And why she was worried is because my dad had, it was right when you could get, like, through the grapevine, an extra phone. Because remember, the phones were owned by the phone companies. And my dad had wired up a second jack in the house. And we were afraid we were going to get busted by the phone company. I mean, it was insane. But as I dug in, they were totally in bed with the government. And it's all been about surveillance and wartime from the very freaking beginning. So DARPA now is taking, since Bell Labs has been sold and broken up, I don't know, looks kind of sad, like since I don't know if it was the 80s or the 90s, but there's a whole history of Bell. They are now, just as of last year, they were sold to Nokia, Bell Labs. Nokia's pretty high tech, but yeah, AT&T owned them, from which AT&T was the American Telephone and Telegraph, which was where Alexander Graham Bell's, it was his division, the Volta Laboratory and Bureau. It was created by Alexander Graham Bell. AT&T was 1925 to 1996. They were owned. And then they started splitting things up in 1996. But Western Electric, and I never realized this, Western Electric was their manufacturing and engineering arm. They used to develop a lot of their hardware. And that was divested in 1983. They got rid of that division. But Lucent Technologies picked them up 1996 to 2006. Alcatel-Lucent was 2006-2016. And Alcatel, if I'm not mistaken, Alcatel was, they were French. And then Nokia just bought Bell Labs in 2016. And I saw that they're working in collaboration with some Dutch telecom and a Munich University right now. And they just announced that they had some sort of terabit per second optical internet they were just developing. So I don't know. Put on a seatbelt for that. But anyway, so Bell Labs was the creation of the beginning of it all. This entire deep state surveillance. You can blame it all on Bell Labs. It's not DARPA. It's not the CIA or the NSA. It's Bell Labs. I think tomorrow we're going to spend the time. I want to dig into the history of AT&T, Bell Labs, and the NSA, and then even go further back, and we're going to look at all of the different technologies that they developed. Maybe a homework assignment, start digging them up, do a wiki or two. Just read about them, because it's pretty crazy. We looked at those Gwen's networks and discovered that AT&T had the long lines, they're called. These are these mysterious towers all over the country that were tied back to the Cold War, they said. But it even goes way before the Cold War. And now DARPA, I mean, if we look at how far we've come because of Bell Labs and their technologies that they developed, utilizing communications and radio frequencies, and now we look at DARPA looking to reinvent communications and back-ending it with artificial intelligence. Guys, this is Skynet. This absolutely is Skynet. Command and control, without having to worry about it, every bit of the electromagnetic spectrum. This will unfold, this challenge, a three-year-long phase that begins in 2017 and finishes in 2020. So maybe that's when they're planning on letting them loose, with a live competition of finalists who have survived the first two preliminary contests, and the team whose radios collaborate most effectively with various types of other radios to dynamically optimize spectrum usage will walk away with a grand prize of $2 million. A broad agency announcement for the Spectrum Collaboration Challenge will be released in the coming months, and it will be available on fedbizops.gov. And the National Telecommunications and Information Administration which is within the Department of Commerce, manages the radio frequency allocations in the United States. I didn't know that. I wonder if the FCC must be under them as well. So, all right, guys, I'm not really sure. I don't want to start on too much. So I think we're going to look at some of the frequency ranges. I'm going to save the VLF that we ended the show on Friday later in the week, because that gets into some really twisted stuff. We're going to hit the Bell Labs and their technologies, I think, first. And, you know, Bell Labs invented the laser, even, and antenna arrays in 1926, and television transmission in 1927, and quartz electronic clocks in 1927 as well. Wearable electronic hearing aids in 1927. Telephone trunking traffic analysis in 1927. So they were already telephone trunking and being able to analyze data that was being sent through. They developed an artificial larynx to be able to speak after you've lost one in 1929. And then broadband coaxial cable in 1929 as well. Ship-to-shore radio systems, ding, ding. That's what they used to use VLF for. Same frequency range as the human brain in 1929. And then as well in 29, frequency interleaving, or like I said, multiplexing of TV signals. 1931, they developed radio astronomy. 1931, they also did stereophonic recording on film. I mean, talkies. 1932, waveguide experiments in theory. And it just goes on from there. 1936, they had some sort of vocoder speech synthesis with a computer. 1936, guys. Like, I just couldn't believe. Like, we always think that they're 50 years ahead of us. I am telling you, 50 years ahead of us. We thought it happened in the 50s, 60s, maybe the 70s. Oh, no. It happened in the 20s and the 30s, and we just found out about it then.